Hey there, and welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about a book with a pretty defiant title, You Can't Read This Book by Nick Cohen. So, Sophie, what's the story here?
Hi there, Sam. Glad to be here. So this book is all about censorship, but not the kind you'd expect. Cohen's argument is that our freedom to read is under threat not from authoritarian governments, but from the very people who call themselves liberals and progressives.
That's a bold claim, and it's the kind of thing that gets people riled up. But he starts with a paradox, right? We have all this access to information, more than ever before, yet he says we're less free to read than we think.
Exactly. The internet gives us a library in our pocket, but the real restrictions are social. It's a culture of moral panic, social pressure, and institutional cowardice that creates an orthodoxy about what's acceptable to read and think.
So it's not the government banning books, it's society deciding what's okay. And he traces this back to a shift in how we see reading itself. It used to be about developing critical thinking, you know, engaging with ideas you disagree with to become stronger.
Right.
He brings up John Stuart Mill, who argued that even false opinions have value because they force us to examine our own convictions. But now, reading is seen as a form of consumption. It's about feeling safe, comfortable, and affirmed, not challenged.
And when the goal is affirmation, then books that disturb or offend become dangerous threats instead of opportunities for growth. That's how you end up with classics like Huckleberry Finn being banned.
Oh, the Huckleberry Finn example is wild. It's been banned for being too sympathetic to Black people in the 19th century, then for using racial slurs in the 20th. And now, it's banned for making white readers uncomfortable and not meeting modern anti-racist standards.
The irony is almost too perfect, isn't it? A book written to expose the cruelty of racism gets condemned for not being pure enough in its anti-racism. That's the demand for ideological purity taken to an absurd extreme.
It is. And Cohen digs into the framework that makes this possible. He identifies a few key developments. One is the rise of therapeutic culture, where emotional safety trumps truth or understanding.
So a book that makes you feel bad is a bad book, regardless of its merit. That's what leads to trigger warnings and removing challenging texts from curricula.
Exactly.
Then there's the transformation of identity politics. He's not against the legitimate struggle for justice, but he's critical of a version that treats identity as moral authority, where some voices are privileged and others are dismissed without engagement.
And that creates a moral hierarchy. Plus, he calls it the new Puritanism. It's all about purity and pollution, where certain words and ideas are treated as contaminants.
The vocabulary has changed, but the structure is the same. Instead of heresy, we have wrongthink. Instead of sin, we have microaggressions. And instead of damnation, we have cancellation.
And social media supercharges all of it. Outrage is rewarded. Nuance is punished. One tweet can destroy a career, and the fear of being targeted silences people, especially those without institutional protection.
That's a key point. The new censorship isn't imposed from above. It's enforced from below, through peer pressure and social sanction that claims to be democratic.
Right? And then Cohen gets into some really controversial territory. He argues that the Western left has made a catastrophic error in how it responds to Islamist attacks on free speech.
He's pretty scathing about progressives who treat criticism of Islam as bigotry, citing the Rushdie Fatwa and Charlie Hebdo as examples of what happens when we lose confidence in our own values.
And he doesn't spare the publishing industry either. Publishers are timid, editors are scared of backlash, so the range of acceptable opinion narrows. Books that challenge progressive orthodoxy struggle to find a home.
But he's not just picking on the left. He's critical of the right too, for banning critical race theory and books about LGBTQ+ issues. The difference, he says, is that the right is more honest about its authoritarian instincts, while the left claims to be defending freedom even as it restricts it.
That dishonesty makes it more insidious. So what's the solution? Cohen doesn't want to go back to some golden age, but he calls for a renewed commitment to liberal democracy, tolerance, open debate, and engaging with ideas we find offensive.
He argues that the best response to bad ideas is better arguments, not censorship. And he ends with a challenge. If you believe in free expression, you have to defend it even when it's uncomfortable.
That means reading books that challenge your assumptions and defending the right of others to say things you despise. That's hard. It takes courage and humility. But he insists it's the only way to preserve the freedom that makes democracy possible.
And he practices what he preaches. He engages with ideas he finds repugnant and refuses to caricature his opponents. The book itself is a model of the intellectual engagement it advocates.
So what am I taking away from this? Honestly, it's that freedom of expression isn't a given. It's fragile, and it needs defending. And the first step is recognizing that the threat can come from anywhere, even from people who think they're on the side of progress.
And if you want to explore more ideas like this, the whole library is waiting on the 7-Minute Books app. There are over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's just $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. But ultimately, this book reminds us that the freedom to read is the foundation for everything else, and losing it would mean losing so much more. We'll see you in the next one.